If you are going to the annual WMNF Record and Book Fair on Saturday, January 19th, we have a deal for you. You can pre-purchase your record and book sale bucks on our website, WMNF.org. Buy some bucks for a friend or as a holiday gift. Each dollar you spend is a donation to WMNF, and buying in advance will mean you'll only stand in one line to check out. For more details on how to buy R&B bucks, please call 813-238-8001 or go to WMNF.org/events. Good morning and happy new year. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My thanks to Bev Capshaw, who sat in last week with a wonderful show that included an interview with 12-year-old frog expert and conservationist Avalyn Tyson. As for today's edition of Talking Animals, in a few minutes, I'll be convening a panel discussion about Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey circus animals. We'll meet our panelists and get underway presently. First, though, we're hearing an animal tune chosen with the discussion of mine. This is Antibalas with the Elephant here on Talking Animals. We'll be right back. All right, this is Antibalas with Elephants, a song I always thought evoked a graceful looping way elephants walk in the wild, not on city streets or arena floors, but that's just me. I'm Duncan Strauss, this is Talking Animals, and what's slated for today is a panel discussion about the use of animals in Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, pegged to Ringling's Tampa engagement opening tonight. Our panel consists of Brian Wilson, Central Florida Coordinator of Animal Rights Foundation of Florida. He's on the phone from Orlando. Scott Blaze, the co-founder of the Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, Tennessee. He's on the phone from there. And Suzanne House, board member of Florida Voices for Animal, who is in the studio with me. She's also, full disclosure, a WNF volunteer and a financial supporter of Talking Animals. And I'm told we'll be joined by phone shortly by Stephen Payne, spokesperson for the Ringling Circus. Meanwhile, let's get started. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Duncan.
Good morning. Brian, do you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, Scott, you're there?
I do. Good morning, Duncan.
Oh, great. And Suzanne, you're in studio, so that's even simpler technologically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good morning.
Great. So, again, thanks so much, all you, for joining me today on Talking Animals. Let's begin by asking each of you for 2 to 3 sentences maybe about how and when you first learned about the tough life faced by animals performing in circuses. Let's start with Brian.
It was in 1996 when my wife and I first started getting involved in animal rights in general, and we learned about the life these animals spend traveling around. It's just completely unnatural travel, completely unnatural tricks, and we realized that the showmanship, the hype of the music and the lights and all the money they spend on marketing is hiding the truth, and that's when we decided to start exposing the truth and helping those that are doing the same thing to expose the truth about animals and entertainment and all the hidden abuse to the animals.
All right, well, we'll certainly delve into some of those details shortly. But, Scott, how about you?
I actually started working with elephants directly when I was 16 years old at a safari park in Canada and learned firsthand the dramatic and traumatic life that captive elephants lead and what it takes to actually get them to do the things they do. And in 1995, I decided to co-found a sanctuary for elephants in Hohenwald, Tennessee. And the goal then was to develop a space where elephants can go, where they can just be elephants, where they can be free from the brutality and the negligent care and experience what the life elephants should have. What we didn't realize at the time, we had experienced the harsh treatment that is required for training, but we didn't realize how deep the damage actually goes until we started seeing elephants recover and evolve once they came to the sanctuary. And that just, of course, created a deeper passion for, passing on the message that elephants simply do not belong in circus. They truly don't belong in zoos. They don't belong in captivity at all. But since they are here, we have to do better by them. They deserve more. And, they deserve a quality of life.
All right. Well, great. We will, of course, tap more of your expertise developed over all those years, spending that kind of time in proximity with those elephants shortly, Scott, of course. And Suzanne, how about you?
Mine, too, was the late 1980s when I realized about the cruelty to elephants when I started in my animal rights movement. But also 1990 when I moved to Tampa and met somebody who worked at Busch Gardens. And when he told me about the abuse to the elephants there, I thought, okay, this is it. Now I have to do something.
All right. So, and you've been doing something ever since.
Yes.
We'll find out some more specifics about what's happening even as soon as tonight, also as the conversation unfolds. So, everyone, in the last few days, to help get the word out about today's show, I've posted some pictures on Facebook of Ringling elephants and what can only, I think, be described as sort of unnatural poses. And the images, seem to have bothered a few people. But those photos kind of only hint at what's involved to yield those behaviors. Let's talk a little bit about what you know about the training of ringling animals and how you feel about those things, how they go about, for example, sort of the classic string of elephants up on stools and other things, and obviously if you want to touch on anything else you might know or have seen documented about their training methods. So Scott, let's start with you in this case, drawing on your sort of early experience, I think, with some circus work.
Certainly. know, I was exposed to a lot of different training methods with elephants. In order to get them to do the behaviors that they do, it is very traumatic. I watched older elephants that had never been trained to do some of those. I also watched the breaking of young elephants, and breaking of young elephants is just, it's truly that. You're breaking them down. You're destroying their spirit and taking the fight away from them, because they realize the more they fight, the more they get punished. And the training is brutal. And I've described it, it's hard to for people to imagine. In all the years we've been talking about it, you know, the biggest thing is that people don't comprehend is how you can harm, how you can hurt an elephant of that size. And, you know, they are sensitive beings. They have the same level of awareness, and if not more so than we have. They feel pain the way we feel. I mean, they can feel a fly when it's walking on the hair of their skin. You are causing open wounds on these elephants using the training methods you're using. You are causing physical harm. And I think, you know, the biggest thing for me is for people that, I guess the best way for me to describe it is, if people have seen even half of what I've seen, circus would be banned tomorrow, or use of elephants in that manner would be banned tomorrow. And it's just difficult to get people to comprehend that. And I don't have a good way to do it other than saying it's absolutely deplorable. It does cause physical harm. Elephants do scream in agony. They do fight, and the more they scream, the more they fight. Oftentimes, the more they get hurt. So they learn just to become submissive to the method. They learn just to, you know, deal with it the best they can. And a lot of times, they deal with that by building a shell around themselves. They become somewhat emotionless.
And Scott, you know, I might even ask, just because I know you say it's hard to probably fully capture verbally, you know, what their experience, but I still might ask you to describe it. But I also want to just urge all our panelists that you know, once we get going here, rather than respond one at a time, I invite you all to chime in at will. And I mean, this is intended to be a discussion, so feel free at any point to add or comment or ask questions of our fellow panelists. So maybe Scott, you could sort of just briefly at least describe, when you talk about breaking the babies, maybe you could sort of describe what that's involved in. I may step off briefly. I think we have our other panelists ready. So go ahead and you can maybe describe what's involved in that, Scott.
Certainly. You know, the experience that I have is with, you know, pulling a baby elephant or a young elephant away from its mom, isolating them, putting them on chains, and then using ropes, harnesses, and the traditional bullhook, and sometimes even hot shots, to start manipulating them. And when you tell them to lay down, you basically have them roped up in a manner that you just pull their feet up from under them, and they hit the ground. And if they don't do that, then you pull harder, and then you start, you know, associating that same behavior with the use of the bullhook, by using the sharp prod sometimes, and using the back end as a bat or a baton of sorts. And you just keep doing these repetitive behaviors over and over and over again until they learn them relatively quickly. But then it's that harsh treatment continues, because you're always trying to keep them to that same level. You're always trying to keep them to the same response time. And what you're breaking them is not only to do the behaviors, but you're breaking them to conform to your dominance. And that's, again, the behaviors are learned pretty quickly, but the constant beatings, the constant and periodic sessions to continue to establish dominance, that's what continues to break the animals down. When they're using, I've seen hot shots, electric prods, used in very sensitive parts of the body, including around the anus, sometimes in the mouth, underneath their lip. They go for the soft spots, and one of the reasons why you don't often see the physical scars that are associated with training is because they are a little bit hidden. They're behind their ear, they're behind their leg, they're, you know, in the softer tissue areas of the body where you see a lot of scarring that has built up over the years.
Okay, cool. Well, I want to introduce Stephen Payne. He's, I believe, Vice President of Corporate Communications at Feld Entertainment.
I'm not sure if you guys can hear me. I can't hear you.
Stephen, can I hear you? Can you hear me?
I can hear you a little bit. Sadly, this is not the best connection in the world, but I'll do the best that I can.
Okay. All right. So just want to let you know you're on the phone with Brian Wilson, Animal Rights Foundation of Florida, with Scott Blaze from the Elephant Sanctuary. In studio with me is Suzanne House from Florida Voices for Animals, and we're just talking about some of the training methods that are employed to get elephants and other animals ready for performances at the circus. So you haven't had the
good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can everybody hear everybody?
Good morning.
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, so, Stephen, I mean, obviously you didn't have the advantage of hearing what just came before, but we are sort of in the, like I say, the midst of talking about some of the training methods, and I'm sure that, you know, you have some things to say about, you know, what our perception, at least, of the training methods is and how that may or may not square with the Ringling Feld Entertainment perception of training the elephants.
Well, I know that some of the groups represented here have a certain perception over the training methods at Ringling Brothers and other organizations. I've been present firsthand for our elephant training, and I can say it's an amazing process. It really does show the bond that exists between the people and the animals, particularly the elephants, and the work that they do together. I mean, most of the animals in our herd, a large portion of them were born at the Ringling Brothers Center for Elephant Conservation. So they're used to having people with them from the moment they're born. And we have people who spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, caring for these little guys. And then when it's time to actually teach them, for example, how to lift up a foot so a veterinarian can look at it, how to lay down, they're very comfortable with the people who have been working with them since they were born. So it really is not the dramatic process that some of these groups make it out to be.
Anyone want to respond to Stephen?
Yes. We Florida Voices for Animals had a billboard last year that depicted just how you do train them by tying them down using bull hooks. It didn't look kind, and it isn't kind.
Well, the pictures you're talking about are actually, we're familiar with those pictures. They were originally published in the Washington Post, and people for the Ethical Treatment of Animals released them and made this big hook to do as if that there was something, you know, nefarious about these. There's nothing wrong with these photos. What's depicted in these photos? The same thing when you teach a child gymnastics. You spot them. In this case, you're dealing with an animal that weighs 1,500 pounds. So you want to support that animal to make sure it doesn't hurt itself. You do it in sand. You have plenty of people present. You involve lots of treats. Repetition, reward. Repetition, reward. That, anybody who's trained a dog knows that's how you train an animal. And eventually, they understand, hey, when I do this, when they ask me to do it, I get food. That's how I taught my dachshund to sit.
Yeah, but you don't tie down a gymnast and you don't tie down a dog and you give them treats. You don't use a bull hook.
These pictures were taken out of context. These pictures were put up on billboards, were spread around for the sole purpose of disparaging the people who spend their lives caring for these animals.
The pictures weren't Photoshopped. They were real pictures.
I'm not saying those pictures coincide with multiple evidence that I've seen.
It's using the same practices that I've seen for the last 20 years, and they are not Photoshopped. It is an accurate depiction, and a lot of times when you have that many people around, from my experience, is because you are using brute force to dominate those animals. And I've seen what happens, and I've heard them screaming, and I just got to ask, even, you know, I am curious. I know you said you've been there, but have you been there from the very first training session? Because the training sessions initially are very brutal. As time goes on, they do wane. And we've also been told, almost anybody in the industry that works with elephants, is you don't show the whole story to the picture on the outside, to the people on the outside. You give them little glimpses of it. And when consultants like you that come in that don't really have firsthand experience, that haven't been there day and night, you don't see the whole picture. And so I'm projecting a little bit here, but I'm not sure how much of your time as a consultant you've actually spent in the training barns. And, you know, I think more so, before you answer that, I think it goes above and beyond just the training. It's the entire lifestyle, the entire livelihood that these elephants go through. It's the day and night in extreme confinement. It's, you know, not proper social herd. You know, the complete picture is just not suitable to the health and welfare of captive elephants.
Stephen, go ahead.
Duncan, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to paraphrase that for me because I heard about every fourth word.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I think what Scott was trying to suggest is that, or he was asking, among other things, is how much you've been, you know, in on the actual training session, especially early on, as those babies and young elephants are first being trained, and some of what goes on in the earliest stages, which Scott knows from firsthand experience, is often kind of the toughest and most kind of difficult to take for the elephant and take for anybody seeing it that's not administering the training. And just
I've been there. Our staff has been there. A number of people throughout our organization have been there. Again, these animals, you spend enough time with them that you get to know their personalities and you get to know what they can do, what they want to do. I sometimes say, you know, you can't make 8,000 pounds do something that 8,000 pounds doesn't want to do. But again, we spend a great deal of time with these animals. I can't necessarily say that what Scott has seen is reflective of what Ringling Brothers does. Again, I can only speak to what Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey does, and we work with these animals in such a way to make sure that they are safe, they're rewarded, they're, you know, again, all the precautions are taken so that both the elephant, the people working with them, everyone involved has a positive experience out of this. That's how you train animals.
And let me ask that, because what's the point Scott raised kind of reminded me of something that you can sort of correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen, but I think at the Center for Elephant Conservation, where I believe most if not all of the young elephants are trained to become performers, I think the head of the center there, Gary Jacobson, has talked about and sort of conceded under oath that even in some of the trials that the very initial training of the babies happens behind closed doors. There's no video to sort of, you know, capture that even for their own training purposes. So it seems like at least the implication is that even for fellow, you know, employees of Ringling or Feld or just even at the Center for Elephant Conservation, that is a very, very difficult thing to watch, and therefore they just don't allow anyone to watch it.
Well, again, the instances that I've witnessed did not appear overtly difficult. I don't have Gary's testimony directly in front of me. I would point out that the trial in which that testimony was given, the court found in Feld Entertainment's favor. And so did the appeals court on two different occasions. And during that trial, we also found that a coalition of animal rights groups were paying the lead plaintiff for his participation. So, again, things that come out in the courtroom come out for different reasons. I don't have his testimony directly in front of me. All I can say is in the experiences that I've witnessed in the time I spent at the Ringling Brothers Center for Elephant Conservation, I have witnessed only the very best of elephant care and training.
Well, so let's get into that, Stephen, what you just alluded to, because a conversation like this, a roundtable, the panel discussion like this, would be sort of remiss in failing to address the announcement last week that the ASPCA had decided to pay Feld Entertainment, which owns Ringling Brothers, $9.3 million to settle its portion of the lawsuit that Feld Entertainment filed against the ASPCA and several other animal welfare organizations as an outgrowth of the suit that we're sort of alluding to here. So let's talk a little bit about the settlement and its implications. Brian, what's your reaction to the ASPCA's decision?
Unfortunately, I have not read a lot about the ASPCA's decision, but I do have some questions about when he says that these animals are, you know, being well cared for, and that the animal experts are saying that these animals are being taken care of in the best, kindest way possible. I'd like him to address why are young elephants, especially young female elephants, being hauled away from their protective mothers. It doesn't seem that separating an animal from its parent at a very young age, especially in the case of Ricardo the elephant who died during a training exercise, seems to be the best treatment of an animal.
Duncan, again, I'm going to have to ask you to paraphrase that because I heard about every fourth word. I apologize.
Okay, no problem. So I think what Brian was chiefly asking was back sort of to some of the training discussion, and we'll still probably return a little bit more to the ASPCA settlement as well in a moment. But I think he was sort of specifically asking about the training that involves taking these babies away from their mothers at a very young age before they would probably in nature.
Well, again, this characterization that we take elephants away from their mothers and everything is another complete falsehood. We have baby elephants who are nursing at the Elephant Center right now with their mothers. You know, young Barack when he was on the unit out on the circus, he went with his mother. I mean, again, this all comes back to let's paint a picture that's not based on reality of what Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey does, because we don't like animals and entertainment. That's fine. If you don't like animals and entertainment, don't come to the circus. But 10 million people a year in the United States come to the greatest show on earth to see our elephants, our tigers, and all our human performers. So again, painting this picture for a political purpose is one thing. None of the people on the call, forgive me, I don't have all your names right in front of me, have been to Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Center for Dolphin Conservation firsthand witness. So, again,
I actually have.
They're entitled to an opinion.
I have been to the Center of Elephant Conservation.
Elephant training and
I did not see
care,
any training while I was there. I was on a tour with another group of elephant professionals. And I saw the living conditions firsthand. I saw the barns that they get chained up in. I saw the very small yards that they live in for the most of their life. It's not the center of elephant conservation that I would have pictured Ringling Brothers being able to do. It's a very small facility. It's quite isolated and it's quite constrained, and it doesn't give elephants the freedom to move the way they truly need to in order to thrive and live a proper life.
So that was Scott, right?
Yeah, Duncan, can you translate? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so sorry. That was Scott, the co-founder of the Elephant Sanctuary, actually saying that he had been to the Elephant Conservation Center, and I think was sort of noting that it was smaller and sort of maybe less grandly equipped than he might have thought that Ringling or Feld would have put together for a facility of that kind of for that purpose.
Well, I'm sorry and stunned that you feel that way. I mean, the facility is over 200 acres. It's a huge investment in conservation. We've had 25 births so far. I think it's something that a vast majority of people who go to the center are amazed by, and something that we as a company, I know something our chairman and CEO, Kenneth Feld, is immensely proud of.
I have never been to the center myself, but I just want to say that in 2011, Ringling got a $270,000 fine by the USDA, and it was the biggest penalty paid by a circus in the history of the U.S. So if Ringling is so perfect, why the fine?
Well, again, I wouldn't claim that we're so perfect. We are regulated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We have a license as an animal exhibitor. We are routinely inspected, unannounced surprise inspections, by USDA. In not all instances do we agree with the findings that they have from their inspections. Sometimes there are differences in veterinary opinion. Occasionally there is a difference in how medicine and medical records should be stored. In not all instances are we going to make an agreement, but we are regulated by USDA and as such answer to that agency. Rather than go through item by item and dispute all of these findings that we did not agree with, we made a business decision and the USDA agreed to it for us to pay a fine. I would note we paid $275,000. Last week, ASPCA paid us $9.3 million, 34 times the difference. So again, I would let each amount speak for itself as to the errors that were made.
Well, yeah, let's come back then to the ASPCA settlement in a moment. But first, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're in the midst of a panel discussion about Ringling Circus Animals. Our panelists are Scott Blaze, co-founder of the Elephant Sanctuary, Suzanne House, board member of Florida Voices for Animals, Brian Wilson, Central Florida coordinator of Animal Rights Foundation of Florida, and Stephen Payne, vice president of corporate communications at Feld Entertainment, which operates Ringling Brothers. So the Tampa engagement of the circus opens tonight, and time and circumstances permitting, we hope to incorporate some listener questions and comments, but we've certainly got a lot to cover with our panelists here. So getting back again to the ASPCA settlement, Scott, I guess I'd like your thoughts partly on to what extent you feel it may have the chilling effect on animal welfare organizations pursuing suits or other litigation. As Stephen has just noted, Ringling paid out $270,000, and ASPCA, looking at everything in terms of the litigation against them, has decided to settle for $9.3 million to pay to Feld/Ringling. So, seems like that's can't help but have some effect on further at least suits, litigation, et cetera, that that animal welfare organizations might consider?
Yeah, you know, it's impossible to say exactly what effect that's going to have. What I can say is, I do believe anyway, is that it's not going to have an effect on the message that animal welfare organizations are still trying to convey, is that the life that elephants are living on the circus, irrelevant of how they're trained, is not appropriate. The training compounds the negligent care. The training compounds the abuse. But the entire picture is completely barbaric and arcane at this point. And I don't think that message is going to change. And I think, you know, if anything, the animal welfare organizations are empowered by this because they need to just demonstrate once again that, you know, the care and treatment of elephants in circus is not appropriate. The testimony, from my understanding, was thrown out because a person, a primary witness, was being paid. That primary witness was not being paid to make and fabricate information. He was paid to try to support him because of the time that he was dedicating towards the trial. And it's sometimes impossible to live a normal life when you're that embedded in a program. And it's my understanding is that's why they were subsidizing his salary. But, you know, going back to a point that was made earlier about the Ringling Brothers' testimony and saying that the primary care, primary training is not videotaped and it's not observed, I think irrelevant of the result and irrelevant of the finding in the being thrown out because of one person's testimony, I think you have to look at the information that came from that. And they are acknowledging that there's some issues and there are some secrets that aren't being exposed. And to me, that just raises more questions.
I don't know if anyone wanted to respond to that. Otherwise, I have a comment about part of what was just said, including the judge's ruling that sort of turns on considering Tom Ryder, who Scott just alluded to as sort of the central witness, but considering him a paid witness and therefore dismissing his testimony as not credible. And that's really where the case, as I understand, and I think I've read pretty much the whole shebang and all the surrounding documents, that's where the case pretty much ended. But I don't think, Stephen, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the issues in the case were dismissed or even ruled on by the judge. It was simply saying, hey, Tom Ryder has been paid by these groups, and therefore he's a paid witness, and therefore his testimony is not seen as credible by me. Would you say that's an accurate kind of?
That's partially correct. The judge dismissed his with prejudice, and what that means is this is over. You can't bring it back again. Not only is Tom Ryder not a credible witness, we give no credibility to his testimony, to the allegations that he is making, because he has been illegally paid by these organizations. So, again, a lot of the animal rights groups say, oh, we didn't actually get our day in court. Yes, you did. And the judge basically said, there's nothing here. This case is over because you have used manufactured litigation to torment this company for 12 years, and you violated the law. As a result of all of these discovery, all of these payments, we came to the conclusion the only way the company could defend itself was to sue these organizations and Mr. Ryder and their lawyers under a racketeering statute. Again, a RICO claim. This was, again, not done by in any malicious way. We didn't ask for this litigation. It was thrust upon us. But as a result of the nefarious tactics that we were able to uncover, we really did find that these groups were conspiring with a paid plaintiff to ruin us. So I think we were completely right and completely entitled, and to a certain extent this ASPCA settlement is a vindication of the steps that we took to defend the men and women who spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, caring for our animals.
All right. Well, with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about what's involved in the 24-hour care of those animals. Because as I understand it, I think the circus and therefore the circus animals are on the road and performing upwards of 48 weeks a year. So let's, because I think some of the core of the suit, which again I understand was dismissed with prejudice, and chiefly about Tom Ryder being considered a paid witness. But a lot of the core of that suit and other issues that certainly come up, including in a conversation like this, is how those animals, you know, live their life, what it's like to be on the road for 48 weeks a year. I don't know if, for example, Brian, if you'd like to address that initially, and we'll get everyone else involved in turn, and people can jump in, of course.
Sure. These animals are spending their entire lives, and for many of them, there has been death on the road, principally Kenny the elephant and Clyde the lion, who have died because of these hardships of travel. These animals don't naturally live on asphalt, nor do they naturally get into boxcars and be shipped across the country for days on end. There is no voluntary effort by these animals because they come in chains and they're subjected to food deprivation and outright abuse at the hands of their trainers if they don't perform. And when they don't.
Okay, now you're just making stuff up. I mean,
this
is not based on any factual information. You're making up your own facts. Food deprivation, that doesn't happen. Punishment if they fail to perform, that doesn't happen.
The USDA report speaks differently. The USDA reports, as has been cited by witnesses and testimony of bullocks being used on elephants and animals spending their entire time in chains, is not. That's in your USDA report. That's not a manufactured fact.
There are also former Ringling employees who reported elephants are routinely abused and violently beaten with bull hooks.
Well, again, I can't go through every allegation that a former employee could decide that they want to make.
Well, that was in 2009.
But I can tell you that the men and women who spend their lives 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, caring for these animals, I have the bond I have witnessed and the time and the commitment. First come the animals, then come their families, then come themselves. I mean, clearly that's a priority placed on animal care.
And I would guess that's money speaks, and like P.T. Barnum said, there's a sucker born every minute. And you can sucker these people into coming to the circus to see this abuse. That's what we're trying to stop. We're trying to stop showing children that it's okay to abuse these animals. We want to educate them and show them that a circus is willing, if people willing to be in the circus, there are a lot of circuses that don't have wild animals. Wild animals belong in the wild. And Ringling, you know, and P.T. Barnum and all those brought those animals here for entertainment. Didn't have anything to do with education. And it's just a money, money, money game. And Feld Enterprises has the money. The animal rights groups don't. And that's why you continue and we have such a hard time.
Well, I wouldn't.
I think it's also vital, if I can, to bring back up the $270,000 fine from USDA, because we're talking about the daily treatment and the daily lives of elephants. And the USDA witnessed that, and they came up with enough evidence to create the largest fine in history by USDA against an animal organization for negligent care. And that's basically what it was. It was revolving negligent care. And this is based on the most minimum requirements of USDA, which are actually pretty simplistic. And if there's enough grounds to create a $270,000 fine for not even meeting the smallest of minimal requirements, again, to me, that just raises more question about the quality of life that you're talking about and what the daily life of elephants really evolves around. And it's not this little snapshot of hey, here's this bond of elephants, you know, between an elephant and a human. That bond is not really a bond. It is a relationship, but it's not a bond. And it's a relationship based on somebody being dominant and somebody being submissive. And in this case, the humans are 100% dominant. And to me, that's not a bond.
Let me just let folks know once more who might just be tuning in. This is Talking Animals on Duncan Strauss. This is a panel discussion about Ringling Circus Animals. The Tampa engagement of the circus opens tonight. Our panelists are Scott Blaze, co-founder of the Elephant Sanctuary, Suzanne House, board member of Florida Voices for Animals, Brian Wilson, Central Florida coordinator of Animal Rights Foundation of Florida, and Stephen Payne, vice president of corporate communications for Feld Entertainment, which operates Ringling Brothers. So we'll probably only just have a few minutes left, and to me, so many more things things to cover. But I guess one of the things, because it's, I guess, to sort of follow up what was last said, Stephen, is because we've come back to the $270,000 fine, and I know you compared it with the 9.3 settlement that ASPCA has agreed to pay, and you already had done the math of how many times those amounts equal. But I guess also what you had said when you first brought that up was that that you understand that Ringling is not perfect, as your way of sort of acknowledging that there was legitimate wrongdoing that was found, and therefore that's
let me stop right there. I didn't say there's any wrongdoing. I said that there were differences of opinions about how medical records were kept, about how medicine was reported to be delivered to the animals. I never said that there's any wrongdoing. Basically, when you go through all of these USDA findings, we looked at all of them. Most of them we did not agree with at all. But again, we're a regulated organization. USDA has our permit to exhibit our animals. Without that permit, we've got problems. So we negotiated with the agency, came to a mutual agreement to settle our differences and move on. We've done that. We've been inspected by USDA multiple times since then. We continue to cooperate with them for their inspections, as well as inspections on the city level and the state level. We're inspected by someone almost every single city that we visit, including Tampa.
And speaking of cities, just because we are winding down, and I want to at least be able to address briefly, there are some cities in this country that have banned the use of the bullhook. And for people listening not familiar, that's sort of the big metal rod that's curved with a hook at the end, and sort of resembles loosely at least a fireplace poker, which animal handlers in the circus and elsewhere use to sort of control and train and other things, elephants. And some cities are in the midst of enacting or considering, such legislation. And really, I think it's probably safe to say, Stephen, that as the bullhooks go, so go the circus elephants. I mean, and more broadly and more notably, just a few days ago, came recent word that Los Angeles is considering banning elephants from performing in circuses within its city limits. So that's, to me at least, seemed like some suggestion that's not just animal rights people, extremists, nuts, whatever you want to call them, that feel this way. If a body like the LA City Council is considering adopting this ban, that would prevent, basically Ringling from performing in the second largest city in the nation, unless Ringling were willing to forego the elephants, which I suspect that's not the case. So what does that mean to you, Stephen?
Well, you threw out a lot there. Let me start off by saying that the guy is an acceptable animal husbandry tool for working with elephants and is only used by highly trained and experienced individuals with Ringling Bells and Barnum and Bailey. Now, to L.A. This ordinance in L.A. is being sponsored by one city council member. We actually took this particular city council member on a extensive tour through our facilities when we were in Los Angeles last year. The tour was actually conducted by our chairman and CEO, Kenneth Feld. I was there. A number of other people were there as well. This individual seemed genuinely impressed by what he saw. However, he has decided he wants to continue to carry forward this piece of legislation. That's his decision. We are in the process of educating other city council members, others in the community, of our animal care, the number of people who come to the Staples Center to see Ringling Brothers, over 100,000 this past summer. And again, how that this is part of the entertainment value that we bring to every single city that we come to. And we hope that the majority of the Los Angeles City Council, should this come to a vote, will agree with us.
And I just want to be clear, Stephen, is that Paul Koretz that you're referring to? That
correct.
Okay. Because at least in the New York Times story that ran on Christmas Day, he's quoted as saying the treatment of elephants in traveling circuses is one of the crueler practices, and it's time for us to stand up for them. He predicted that once Los Angeles outlawed circus elephants, other communities would follow. And then his quote continues, at some point, this will be universally banned throughout the country. So
the city commission in Hallandale, Florida, has already banned using bullhooks.
Well, and also there's more than a dozen countries that have banned at least some wild animals from performing in public. So, so there is some precedent on an international level for this. It's not just sort of these odd isolated cases that pop up.
Well, again, I can't speak to the motivations that were brought into all of these other countries as to the reasons they decided to pass the legislation that they did. As for Hallandale Beach, we were somewhat surprised by that because in our 143-year history, we've never, ever been to Hallandale Beach, yet a lot of the groups who were supporting this legislation kept mentioning us.
Well, once that movement starts going, it will snowball. You have to start someplace. So we've started there, and it's just going to keep going. I don't know why you can't have a circus without elephants. You've got so many other wonderful acts, the aerial acts, all those things. Why can't you just do that?
We have a lot of wonderful acts at the greatest show on earth, and elephants are a big part of it.
But you don't need them.
They've been the symbol of the greatest show on earth for 143 years. They are consistently named one of the number one reasons people come to Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey. And in Tampa, we have an animal open house where people actually get a chance 90 minutes before the show opens to come, see the animals up close, meet their trainers, ask questions, learn more about our conservation program.
They'll come to the circus even if there aren't elephants. You know, if you say you care so much about your animals, how about in 1998 when here in Tampa, the tiger Ernie was shot in his cage, shot by one of your one of the trainers. You don't care about your animals.
Again, you can probably throw out an example. You can pick and choose. I can only tell you what I've seen firsthand, what I know what this company does today for the animal care and conservation that we have for
30 dead elephants since 1992. You don't need elephants in the circus. Put humans in the circus.
We also had 25 births during the time of our conservation program. We also take this knowledge
born in captivity, not in the wild where they belong.
I let you talk. Let me finish. We'd also take our conservation knowledge and education to range countries. In Sri Lanka, they shoot 150 elephants a year. We're over there right now trying to stop that.
Right. Let me clarify that a little bit, if I can, Stephen, because, you know, you've used the word conservation in your conservation program. You've had 25 births. Right. That only serves to subsidize the use of your elephants in circus and perpetuates what I perceive as negligent care and inappropriate lifestyle for any animal in captivity. But, you know, you're not doing much for global conservation because you're not learning anything that those elephants in the wild don't already know. The elephants in the wild know how to breed. They know how to make babies. The issues with wild populations is the overgrowth, overpopulation of humans, and trying to develop appropriate preserves and to protect native lands for elephants. You aren't learning anything from your captive breeding program that benefits wild elephant preservation.
And most of the elephants that you're breeding are seven and under. They aren't capable of breeding until they're over the age of seven. They can't nurse. So even babies...
That's not true. We've had animals who've given birth who have had absolutely no issues nursing. Again, I only heard part of the previous comment about our conservation program and everything, Duncan. So what I think I would address is I think I heard the gentleman say that what we do has no benefit in range countries, which I would object to strongly. Our veterinarians spend an inordinate amount of time in range countries. The elephant herpes virus, for example, one of the most deadly infections that a baby elephant can get, kills over 90% of them. We have been working with Baylor University, the Smithsonian National Zoological Park, and other organizations to try and stop the spread of this disease, not just here, but everywhere. It is a bane on young elephants and is one of the saddest things that can happen. So we also are working with these organizations in Sri Lanka to manage their populations to reduce that human-elephant conflict. Again, it's putting our money where our mouth is.
All right. Well,
sure, but breeding in captivity doesn't do anything for the information that you're providing to protect or to minimize the human-elephant conflict. That activity of breeding that you're doing serves no benefit to wild preservation. The research you're doing on the herpes virus is only protecting those that are being born in captive populations. My understanding is that there isn't an issue with herpes virus in wild populations at this point. It's solely a captive
issue. Sorry, Duncan. I didn't hear any of that.
Well, I think he was sort of largely disputing your characterization and saying that it didn't really help, you know, beyond just frankly the
why am I not surprised?
Well, okay, but anyways, I'm here's the thing though. We are sort of not only at the end of our time, we're actually sort of well over time. So the only thing I was just going to add, maybe just because a moment ago you had mentioned the All Access pre-show. Stephen, I know that's sort of designed to promote sort of greater familiarity and ease about the circus and its animals, but sometimes I think you would acknowledge it can backfire. I mean, over the years, people have talked about seeing, you know, lacerations on the elephants that are from the bullhooks and swaying, which if you don't even know that much about animal behavior, that's immediately telegraphs that the animals are experiencing great stress.
Or excitement or pleasure. Again, I've seen elephants play when they're going to get fed. I've seen elephants sway when the music comes on.
All right. Okay, well, gosh, you know, I want to thank everyone. I wish we had more time, but I think we covered as much ground as we could, and I'm sort of dropping elements of the show overboard as we go because we're nearing noon here. But let me just thank again Susanna House, Florida Voices for Animals, Brian Wilson, Animal Rights Foundation of Florida, Scott Blaze, The Elephant Sanctuary, and Stephen Payne, Feld Entertainment, Ringley Brothers and Barnum & Bailey. Thank you all for your time. I appreciate it very much.
Please come to the Elephant Demos.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Duncan.
Thank you.
Can I say something about the demos?
There are protests and demonstrations every night of the stand starting tonight at the Tampa Bay Times Forum. It starts at 6 o'clock, right, the protests? Right, Susan? Okay. So if you want to get involved in that based on what you've heard. All right, so this is Talking Animals. It's time to play Name That Animal Tune, where you can win a prize, a Talking Animals T-shirt. The first person who calls in to correctly name the title of this relevant for today animal song, 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Can name that relevant animal tune. We'll take it off the air, perhaps. But again, for more information about the protests going on throughout this week's Ringling engagement, you can go to floridavoicesforanimals.org and get information. And if you'd like to participate or just learn a bit more about the circuses beyond what we talked about today, you can get great information there. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. Very, very abbreviated news and announcement thing. I just want to be sure to announce that there is going to be a annual yard sale fundraiser coming up on January 12th. This is an annual event, but each year a different animal organization receives the proceeds, and this time it'll be the Wildlife Haven Rehab. So this the yard sale itself will be January 12th from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. and be held at the Sunoco Tampa offices on Falkenberg Road in Brandon. And we'll hear much more about the yard sale and the Wildlife Haven Rehab being benefited from it in a brief interview on next week's edition of Talking Animals. And also, this very Saturday, it's Barkarilla, and you can find out more about that at animalbasedcharities.org, but that's basically happening at Gaspar's Grotto in Ybor City this Saturday from noon to 5, and there's all kinds of games and contests and pooch parades and more, and I think we're going to have to sort of jettison the rest of our news and announcements for today, but I think time very, very well spent. So, I think we're not even going to get into the comedy piece. If any time, we could have used a comedy piece, it was today. But anyway, all right. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, and we have reached the end of today's edition. We'll be back next Wednesday, January 9th at 11 a.m. Hope you'll join me then. Also, visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. That's all found at TalkingAnimals.net. Talking Animals Broadcast Outreach Consultant is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening.
I'm sorry we couldn't get more callers and listeners involved in some of those in our exchange today, but we obviously had a full dance card and still didn't cover as much as I would have liked to, but I thought it was still a good, fruitful conversation. So have a good week. Be kind, animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the wonderful Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music airing next from noon to 3. We're closing out today's show with an animal song, an elephant song even of sorts. This is Tame Impala with Elephant taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Wikiwachi, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Take care.